Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
I'm Michelle Martin. This is Money and Me. My next guest became a full-time investor at the age of 27, and he quit university to focus as an entrepreneur on educating in the world of stock and options. He is the founder of value investing blog RethinkWealth.com, and he joins me now to share how his investing framework, which he says allowed him to generate a portfolio return of over 80% for 2020, how does this investing framework actually work? And he's also going to help us understand his thought processes behind his stock decisions. So welcome, Chris Susanto.
Hi, Michelle. Happy to be here.
Yeah, good to have you with us. So let's get to know you a little bit better, Chris. Why at age 27 did you decide, I'm going to go into full-time investing? When did you first start?
Well, I think there was a Warren Buffett quote that says something around the sense of never give up on searching for the job that we are passionate about. So in that sense, I think I'm lucky to have found my passion in analyzing and valuing businesses in the stock market since I was 21, and I have started learning way before that. So I think pursuing this line is what I want to do in life, and as a next step, I'm also looking to set up MA license fund in Singapore in the future too, to pursue my life passion further.
Fantastic.
Plus, go ahead.
Plus,
I think in a sense, being a full-time investor should be something that more people should aspire to be in the future, because we have to increase our knowledge to a state where we can really start to make money while we sleep sustainably, not in a gambling kind of way, so that we can have more spare time to live our best life.
Well, I like that, making money roll in while I sleep in a sustainable way, not in a casino gambling sort of way. And I think you're going to help us out today. So, Chris, you're going to let us into your portfolio in a while. But first, I wonder if you can share with us more about how you make your stock decisions. You say you have a framework that has four M's in it: mindset management, math sense, money management, and one S, strategy. Can you share more about your model and maybe tell us how your model works in real life?
Sure, Michelle. So the framework is called the 4M1S growth framework, and the idea is really I want to have a framework where it sort of encompasses the way that I make my decisions. So the first M is called mindset, and I think mindset is very important for us investors, because a lot of people look at stock in a way that it's just a ticker symbol and it goes up and down, and you feel good when it goes up and you feel bad when it goes down. And that's dangerous, because ultimately the mindset should be from a business owner point of view, because when we own a stock, essentially we are technically a part ownership in the business, and when the business do well, the stock will likely do well too. So I like to look at myself not really just like a value for the sake of value, but we can find value in many aspects in the stock market. So I like to see myself more of a business-like stock investor. So, for example, let me give you a case study of a stock that I made about 50% in less than 6 months. The stock has already been acquired. It's called Care.com. So at the start, Care.com at the background level, it's basically they are like the Uber of care. So they sort of match the caretaker to the parents who need help taking care of their kids. So what happens with regards to Care.com is that my first buying price was about $14.45. I think it went down to even as low as $7.95. So for some people who are looking more maybe on just a technical perspective, might have already cut loss, but because I'm looking at it from the point of view of a business, and I know that the value is much more than that, which in my estimate was around $20. So from a business owner mindset, when it went down to $7.95, I bought way more, right? So essentially, I sort of like doubled down. And that brings me to the second M, which is the management and the business, which is really fundamental in understanding stocks, because ultimately we need to have a management that, as Buffett has said, also he's looking for management with energy, capability, and integrity, with integrity being the most important. So the CEO of Care.com, Miss Sheila Lirio Marcello, is actually someone who had skin in the game as a founder and also as a mom who finds it difficult to find the care she needs for her baby before starting Care.com. So the business, Care.com, at that point in time is scalable, right? Because it's focused on tech. And it's also backed by Google Capital, a growth equity fund backed by Alphabet Inc. So the business generates solid return on capital, has zero debt. And I knew that when looking at the management and business, they were facing temporary difficulties back then, because unfortunately, back in March 2019, back then, two kids died because Care.com have a lag in the background check. But after that unfortunate incident, they implemented solid measures, added new people into the board. And ultimately for me, that brings us to the third M, which is mathematical sense. And in our today's world, I think a lot of people are very bullish, and a lot of people places high premium on growth stocks. And sometimes that premium can be justified, but sometimes it can't. And when the expectations are not met, that's where the stock price may plunge, because such a high expectations have already been baked in into the future. That's why my third M, mathematical sense, is part of the equation, because I like to value the company. So different kind of company, we should value it differently. So for Care.com, I use the discounted cash flow analysis because it has a positive free cash flow. But of course, for other companies, there are many other methods, such as net current asset value, price to book, really depending on the company. So far, is it okay, Michelle?
Yes, it is. And now I'm caught up in the story of Care.com. Have they been acquired, Care.com?
Yes, they have been acquired. So like coming back to the fourth point of the M is the money and portfolio, right?
Yeah.
So my style is the style of, I like to invest in my high conviction ideas, and I like to put a higher weightage on it, because in the baseball analogy, you should only swing when there's a sweet spot. So in terms of Care.com, when it went down to 7.95, I think I sold off even some of my other stocks in my portfolio to buy more of Care.com. And I think my average cost at that point in time was about close to 10, and then it got acquired 6 months later. No, less than 6 months later at 15.
Right.
By a bigger company.
Yeah. I see. Okay, so that is very clear for us. I think it's really interesting for us to hear how investors make their stock decisions, you know? I wonder if you can share some stocks that you currently have in your portfolio that's going to help us understand, I suppose, your position in the world, so to speak, and how you see things unfolding. Yeah. Because a pandemic only happens maybe, I don't know, once a lifetime or so. So how are you positioned? What do you have in your portfolio?
Sure. But before that, Michelle, can I share a little bit about my last S, which is the strategy for the framework?
Okay, sure. Very quickly.
Yep. So the strategy part, we have to look at the types of companies, and then we have to decide whether we would like to profit from it through stocks or options. That's about it. Okay. So, so with regards to my portfolio, I guess I like to look at it in terms of the so-called barbell approach. So I like
bubble,
to own great
barbell,
companies.
Barbell,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, barbell approach, yeah. So I like to own great companies that are likely to be longer-term compounders. So, I mean, like, perhaps, like, companies like I have some Activision Blizzard, I have some Take-Two Software, I have some Facebook, that are really going to, in my view, ride the longer-term circular tailwind of digitalization. But at the same time, I also leverage on the general themes that I think may happen in 2021.
Mm.
For example, vaccination, but not through more of the bio companies, but in the recovery play. Like, I have some Carnival and Delta Airlines call option. So the idea is really, I think people are currently underestimating the ramping up of the vaccine.
Mm.
Yeah.
And which the comeback of these stocks. But you, yeah. In terms of pharmaceuticals, you know, a lot of people think, oh, pharmaceuticals are too difficult to analyze. Do you have a stance there?
Well, I think everyone has different circle of competence.
Yes.
That means that everyone has different area of expertise and comfort level.
Mm.
And I think we shouldn't totally exclude pharmaceuticals company, even if we are coming from a layman point of view. But at the same time, we have to be honest with ourselves,
yeah.
Whether it makes sense to us or not, right? But I would say stick to things that we are comfortable with, because the most important thing is we have to be able to sleep well at night.
Okay, so find a sweet spot in your circle of confidence. And if you look at this battle against COVID and us rolling out our vaccinations, you see comebacks for travel, energy, entertainment sectors as well. And that's where you have your call options.
Yes, because the way I look at it is, for example, airlines, most of the airlines make most of the profits from business travelers. And business travel may be impacted in one way or another, because now if it's not so important, we can do Zoom for business meetings. But for the kind of cruises, people are, in my view, right, people are dying to go out and to enjoy themselves and to have fun.
Yeah,
and
I think so.
Yeah, yeah, so I think there's a That's a core part of the thesis, yeah.
Okay, so, you know, on news, Carnival planning to sell $1 billion in fresh stock because cruise ships are going to remain still in port. So still looking to raise funds because they can't take customers around the world on their cruise ships. So when news like that comes up, I mean, how does that feed into your position for Carnival, for example?
Yeah, so I think for Carnival, we have to focus on the facts, right? The facts are that based on their latest earnings, did that they have enough cash to last even in a zero revenue scenario in 2021.
Mm.
And Carnival has historically been the type of cruise that likes to play on the safer side. So even before the pandemic, their leverage and their balance sheet is one of the and the cleanest as compared to two of their competitors, Royal Caribbean and Norwegian Cruise Line. So I think they are playing it safe. Right now, their shares have been rallying quite a bit.
Yes.
And with a market cap of about $27 billion, $1 billion of shares issuance wouldn't dilute it too much in my view. And I think for them, their focus is really to just survive through this pandemic first. And that's why they are doing this.
Carnival shares gaining more than 77% over the past 6 months. All right, let's move on to other themes that you think are going to be good for 2021, or that 2021 is going to be good too, I should say. We just had news yesterday of the first digital payments company to list on the SGX Catalyst. So I've been interested in this theme. What do you think of digital payments?
I think digital payments is wonderful and it encompasses many areas. Of course, the pandemic sort of accelerates the whole digitalization space. And as we can see, even in Singapore, when we go to food court now, a lot of the hawker stalls are accepting digital payments, and not only from one vendors, but from many vendors. So I think this trend is likely here to stay, but it will not be easy, in my view, to find the winners because competition is also very stiff. And everyone is doing digital payment, right? Grab, Shopee, maybe Facebook, right? WhatsApp Pay, Google Pay. So competition is stiff and it's hard to have a high conviction on who is going to win in this space. That's my view.
So when you're passing through digital payment providers, what do you think will give one the competitive advantage over the other then?
I would say the ease of use. Mm. The ease of use and the initial economies of scale. So those who are able to become a first mover in a particular country will likely maintain the lead there because people are more used to it. For example, in terms of ease of use, maybe if we talk about Grab Pay, right? Grab, when we take Grab, if the thing is linked to Grab Pay, then the adoption rate will be higher. And in terms of the economies of scale, it's about how many businesses actually supports the payment system. So I think those are some of the factors to look at. For example, in Indonesia, because I'm from Indonesia, I'm a PR. Hmm. So in Indonesia, we see that the one who actually sort of did very well in the digital payment space at the start is the company who are able to have the largest selection of businesses who accepts the payment system. I think at that point in time, it was OVO, right? Yeah. So, but the space is burning lots of cash. And the idea is really at one point in time, they need to have the scale and the market share that is big enough to start making a profit. But at this point in time, I guess focusing on pure digital payment company, I would say that the one who already have currently have the scale and currently have the traction would likely still be the future leaders, for example, PayPal and companies like that.
Okay, so yeah. If you say that you're looking at Facebook's venture into payments, Facebook Pay is being rolled out. So this means you're buying into Facebook?
Yes, so I do have some Facebook shares, but the idea for Facebook is really is about the ease and the convenience. So let me just give you an example. Sure. Right now, if we go out and eat with our friends, mm-hmm. we use WhatsApp, right? And basically, if we want to pay right now, we'll go to other apps and then we do a pay now. But if we have a WhatsApp pay, the ease of sending money to our friends will be as simple as sending a message. And Facebook, a lot of businesses go on Facebook to sell things, to do ads. If Facebook has a payment system embedded in the whole ad system and the whole shopping experience, then it makes it a one-stop shop for people to find things, take things, pay things. So I think that could be quite a solid competitive advantage if they're able to execute it well.
Chris Lee Susanto, I should say, full name, is the founder of RethinkWealth.com. It's rethinkwealth.com. He's my guest today in Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. We're going to, you know what? We've got so much good stuff when it comes to your portfolio and themes. I think we can save it for a whole other show, Chris. But before we let you go, I want to give investors a sense of the reality, you know, when they hear, oh, Chris Susanto's coming on. He made more than 80% on his portfolio in 2020. I want to be just like him. But it doesn't come without some mistakes along the way. So what would you say have been some of your greatest failures maybe as an investor, then maybe you can end off with your greatest success. You know, we end on a high note. So we'll start with failure maybe.
Okay. I've never viewed anything as failure to say because when I fail or when I make loss in an investment, I think I've succeeded way more through learning and growing from that experience. But I'm able to forward predict potentially some of my potential greatest failure as an investor in the future is if I'm way in over my head, I'm too overconfident, I let emotions get the better of me, even though I have a comprehensive list of checklists, right? Yeah. But the idea is really to be more rational. So in that regard, I think the greatest success would really the focus of having a solid foundation of becoming a business-like stock investor when I was young. Mm. And the business-like focus is key here, Michelle, because if we want to take advantage of the power of compounding, right, the ability to swing at the pitch will require us to lower our risk as much as we can while searching for the highest potential reward. So I think the idea is that the greatest success would be being aware of the emotions. So I do meditations about like 20 minutes in the morning and at night. And I think that's important for people to do, because especially for investors, because emotions can get the better of us through fear of missing out, through greed. And I think it's important to accept what you know and accept what we don't know, and don't try to swing at every pitch. And remember that investing is not gambling, and the preservation of wealth is the first step to grow our wealth. If we lose our wealth, then there's no wealth to grow. So I think that's important.
All right, I'll let you get back to the meditation, Matt. I think that's a good idea. You know, you're the second investor that I've spoken to, actually, who says that he really does invest in himself and time on, you know, with the mind at peace in meditation. So thank you very much, Chris, for joining us.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Yes, we'll have you back again. Chris Lee Susanto, he is the founder of RethinkWealth.com, joining me right here on Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.